listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Censori Uncensored. When Australian architect Bianca Censori appears in public, often nude, always silent, she never fails to shock. Is it art? Is it abuse? Is it love? Kanye West's wife tells Anna Peel her own story, from her all-consuming art project to rehab in Spain to this moment when she decided it was time to speak for herself. Photographs by Katie Grannon. Opening photograph shows Bianca Censori riding a black horse, nude, with her hair draped strategically, like Lady Godiva. Bianca Censori says she's done being naked in her 3 years of public life since she married the artist formerly known as Kanye West. Censori's nudity had become ostentatious. When I note that yesterday, the first time we'd met in person, Censori's sheer bodysuit and lack of bra exposed her nipples, she says, that to me is basically not nudity. Undress has not been a new or public-facing endeavor. I had an obvious obsession with nudity, the 31-year-old Australian says. We are in a quiet room upstairs from the space in which her first clothed art show will take place in Seoul in September. Or rather, December. Ye, as he's now legally known, is there too, but is laying low. Censori suggests to keep the spotlight of the show and this story on his wife. Until now, she says, I was naked everywhere. I didn't detach with it at any point. I consistently showed the same imagery over and over and over again, Censori explains. I live my artwork. Censori's nakedness has been fully literal. Confection is clothing, in the form of a hard candy string bikini, as she wore for a business meeting about the planning of Biopop, the first installment of a 7-year performance art project that she is in Korea to debut. Or when the world saw, thanks to paparazzi photos, her bare shoulders, during a private moment with Ye in the back of a Venetian motorboat. Or, most memorably, on the Grammys red carpet last February, Censori stepped out of the limo, turned away from the cameras, and dropped her black Galliano fur to the floor to reveal herself in a nearly invisible mesh dress, sewn onto Censori by future Maison Margiela couturier Simon Carl. Censori hadn't planned for this to be the climax of her nudity project, but she'd been working on a film with Ye and the artist Vanessa Bancroft, Vanessa Beecroft. A few days before the Grammys, they happened to come across the illusion fabric that actors wear in places like the back of backless gowns to keep them in place. Her multi-year process of disrobing was complete. In 2025, Bianca Censori was the most Googled woman in the entire world, which Censori requests I point out to the editor of Vanity Fair in a bid for the cover. I'm trying not to sound like I'm bragging, but it is not a position that anybody in time has ever had that much visibility without speech, Censori says. If it was just nudity, a lot of people would have that. But it also proves in a time that was so overexposed and vulnerable that mystery still has power. She's right that her nakedness may not be the only reason for her incredible search volume. But the other reasons are not such a mystery. In the only in-depth interview she's ever given, Censori is finally speaking about all that nudity, about her childhood and her early career, about her husband's mental health and apparent anti-Semitism, and about who exactly is in control of her life. Last February, the official channels to Censori ran through her husband's company, Yeezy, where Censori leads the architecture department, and through Milo Yiannopoulos, a far-right provocateur who had worked on Ye's 2024 presidential campaign. But after the Grammys moment, I took an educated guess at her personal email address and made contact. She agreed to a call to talk about her art, and we spoke for the first time a few weeks later. The conversations continued. Over months, the woman who called herself Bianca the Elusive Unicorn, Bianca, as she pronounces her own name, her Australian accent elongating vowels into dip and triphthongs, eventually explained much more. At the time, it was widely reported that Censori was thinking of leaving Ye amid a deluge of horrifying behavior, and possibly, or so the leering speculation of tabloids and comments sections goes, abuse of Censori herself. 5 days after the Grammys, Ye posted "I'm a Nazi" on X, which he followed up with a message, "I have dominion over my wife. This ain't no woke as feminist shit. She's with a billionaire." 2 days after that, Ye ran a Super Bowl commercial directing people to his website Yeezy.com, where he began selling T-shirts with swastikas on them. If Censori's project was provoking the world by showing everything while saying nothing, Ye was saying everything, a lot of which was very, very bad. In January of this year, he apologized, and the trajectory of Censori's story and this story changed yet again. Censori knows that friends who don't have visibility into her frequently peripatetic life, before Korea she'd been in L.A., Australia, and Japan, see her only in tabloid photos, or wordless and nude in the background of footage of her billionaire husband and his coterie of colleagues, friends, enablers. Like much of the public, these friends wonder whether she has consent in her public art, or if Ye is puppeteering the display of her body. They want to know whether she is silent because she has not been allowed to speak. They want to ask what I first did a year ago. Is she okay? "I don't really care," Censori says, "of what we make of her. I always just think they'll get it someday, and if they don't, they don't. As long as I'm able to express myself to my full potential, that's all that matters to me." Each other's skin. Before Censori became the most Googled woman in the world, she was a precocious little girl in Melbourne. Her parents, who are still married, have three children: Bianca, her younger sister, Angelina, and a brilliant brother who does not want to be part of this mishigas. The family was super Greek Orthodox, Censori says, noting that she's still very religious. When Censori was a child, she would read books of factoids so she'd have something to say about any topic that arose. "People would bring something up, and then I'd know something about that topic of information," she says, accurately. "I'm a researcher, and factual also." Censori's father, who had been convicted on heroin possession and firearm charges before Censori was born, owned a fleet of claw machines successful enough to send his middle-class children to private school. "Amusement machines are better than having a place that collects rent," he would tell his daughter. Censori knew the games were suspiciously impossible to win. But one day, she decided she must have Baloo, the pear-shaped bear from the Jungle Book. Though her father could have simply opened the door and given her the toy, she sat in front of the machine for 8 hours until she got him, then promptly added him to the 50-odd other plushies on her bed. "They slept with me because I felt like they had feelings," she says. "If one fell on the floor in the night, Censori would wake up bereft." She still occasionally carries stuffed animals around, but according to her, it's now for effect. Censori says she has always been guided by overwhelming emotion. Her parents had to remove the phone in their living room because she would incessantly call her father at work, demanding to know when he was coming home. If the clock went 1 minute past the ETA, Censori would ring him back. "You're a liar," she'd yell. "You're not here. Why would you do that to me?" "I wasn't able to regulate for my whole life," Censori says. "I also pair bond so intensely and so deeply that that person becomes part of me. That's my person. You know that movie Together where they're getting into each other's skin? I loved that one. That's kind of who I am. In the 2025 film, actors and real-life spouses Alison Brie and Dave Franco slowly fuse into a single being. This depth of feeling tracks with how Censori describes nearly every relationship. As a girl, she would sit by the fence and wail when she couldn't be with her young neighbor. Of her husband, she continually repeats, I love him so much. When we part, she tells me she feels like she made a friend. It's only ever brought joy to my life, she says of codependency. I just love that person so deeply, so intensely, that I want to be around them. Next photos. Censori, starring in her art film titled Bianca, stepping out at a Grammys after party in 2025, on a family trip in Japan, bearing it all with Ye on the Grammys red carpet, an installment of Biopop, her seven-year art project that debuted in Korea last year. Censori apparently got the highest grades for art in her high school graduating class, one of the only things her mother, Alexandra, nervous and wearing a faux fur coat, feels comfortable revealing to me when we meet in Korea after Censori's show. After considering majoring in sculpture, Censori entering the University of Melbourne's architecture program, where she got bachelor's and then master's degrees. College, she says, was one of the most difficult periods of her life. I like when something feels intense, horrible, scary, all that sort of stuff, she says, because there's growth on the other side. Censori alternated between being exorcism-level upset while overworking on assignments and getting deep in context, like a study abroad in Manila, where she learned about sustainable housing. Kneeling on the sofa, Censori becomes extremely animated, as she explains that because of inadequate housing there, a large percentage of the homes in the city are part of informal settlements. Since a handful of families own all of Manila's land, these communities aren't protected by anything other than de facto tenure, unofficial temporary possession of an area. If the landowners want their space back, they will often give the people living there enough money to move somewhere less expensive, but far from their work and communities. This monologue on housing theory was a roundabout way of explaining a photo of Censori with her mother, aunt, and sister, in which Censori looks like the daughter of a Real Housewife of New Jersey with a clementine tan and leopard print bustier. I had asked about the dissonant image of Censori, and she breezed past the picture itself, which was taken at a wedding that Censori attended after returning from Manila. What I'd wanted to talk about was that the photo seems to date to a liminal period when Bianca the civilian ended and Bianca the unicorn began. The elusive unicorn. Starting as an undergrad, Censori spent 4 years working at what she calls a normie architecture firm, where she discovered being an architect was less about creating monuments to genius ideas as it is filing for permits to install the correct number of toilets. She was finishing her thesis in 2020 when the general manager of Yeezy reached out because Ye had seen an image Censori had posted to Instagram, not a nude selfie, but a digital mask with alien proportions. Censori sent back her portfolio, and she met Ye in Switzerland in the middle of the pandemic. He offered her a job as head of architecture in Los Angeles, where she fell in with a group of fashion and art world people, including Ghadir Rajab, a stylist who would begin styling and photographing Censori, and Leo Becerra, the director of Biopop, and witness to the early days of Censori's nudity project. When she started sourcing barely clothes from dance stores and sex shops, she was always laughing, always dancing, Becerra says. At Yeezy, Ye and Censori began to iterate. Most of what they worked on was never realized, including more developed versions of the mound-like structures Ye built on his Calabasas, California property in 2019. with the intention of revolutionizing sustainable housing. Censori was also involved with the renovation of a Malibu home built by the Pritzker Prize-winning architect Tadeo Ando, which Ye bought in 2021 for $57.3 million and subsequently gutted. Though this was widely considered to be an architectural sin, a representative for Ando told The New Yorker he does not like to talk much about it. Censori feels absolved. She'd been trying to help make a home on a small oceanfront footprint feel as grand as Ando's work deserved. In so doing, Censori and Ye ruined it, to her glee. Ando did not respond to Vanity Fair. The house was red-taped and sold at a reported eight-figure loss. When I suggest that her passion for housing security seems at odds with construction waste and moldering remnants, Censori says rehoming people to a beachfront property in Malibu is a way of controlling them. My husband and I had worked on affordable housing also, but I feel so strongly about the topic that I don't believe it is right to rehouse people in a place that you choose to rehouse them. Affordable housing is not actually a housing issue. The other systems need to uplift the individual so they're able to have autonomy and make choices. I don't think it's okay to say, like, oh, you can't get a house? Let me get you a house, but let me put you in that place. The thing about destruction is it gives life to something else, Censori says. So when I would enter that house, that was, quote, destroyed. Bats were living inside of it, and the sea salt had taken over the steel that was in the house and was rusting. A tree in the shape of a tree, because that's what nature does or whatever, Censori says. What does a house want to be? And that, I feel, will be my life's work. The couple's new home in Beverly Hills is the subject of an HOA dispute with their more architecturally conservative neighbors. It was built in the 2000s, but it looks like someone was like, hey, have you seen that movie Blow? That's what I want, an 80s cocaine house, Censori says. Anytime anyone comes over, I'm like, do not look at the house. Censori also liked that an expression of ego, the supposed Malibu masterpiece, was being used in a way that hadn't been intended. They have this idea of, okay, once I have this home and I've handed it off to the client, it has to remain the same way as when I passed it off, Censori says of architects. But that's not how people use space. I think that the destruction of the home was beautiful to me, and I think symbolic also of that time. The year Ye purchased the house, Kim Kardashian filed for divorce, a decision she subsequently attributed partially to his mental breaks, which were reported, self-documented, and frequently made into music. Around the same general period, Censori and Ye were falling in love. Proximity, Censori offers by way of explanation, just working together. You're spending so much time with somebody, so we'd be either on the phone together or with each other all the time. His aura both overpowered her and complimented her own. You've got to see it, Censori says of his magnetism. We're so similar. Suddenly, Censori was experiencing what her producer, Ted Lawson, calls the banality of extravagance. When you're in the bubble Ye is in, it's ubiquitous. Censori joined a kind of chaotic privilege, captured in the 2025 documentary of Ye, In Whose Name. The doc was made over 6 years and comprised footage shot by Nico Ballesteros, to whom Ye gave seemingly complete access, letting the young stranger film him for more than half a decade. Despite her inability to moderate in personal relationships, Censori does not make herself seem like an obvious fit for this environment with her rigorous restraint, in her academic and artistic pursuits, in her stringent silence. However, Lawson says, she's completely natural there, amazingly. It doesn't faze her, in my view. You know, it's normal reality. As an entity, she already has a kind of iconic vibe and a sense of herself, and whether people understand what that means or not doesn't matter. I didn't marry my husband because I wanted some sort of platform, Censori says. I married him because I love him. Is that like the corniest thing ever? Since Ori may not have wanted a platform, but now that she had one, she was going to stand on it naked. She understands that no one would be interested in her if she weren't what she calls a nippo wife, like I'm famous by association. But your image is replicated without your consent all the time. It's replicated, it's brought down, it's picked apart, all those kinds of things. The public perception seemed to be that Sensori was a mute captive being trafficked in daylight and dressed by her husband like a sex doll, a narrative that was not aided by the Venice incident. I ask if she knows what people thought happened in the water taxi. Yes, she says, that I gave a blowjob on the boat. She didn't. Ye was sitting on the stern, Sensori says, and she was simply kneeling on a stool and resting her head on his lap. She says her aunt, the one in the college-era picture, was also on board. The coverage humiliated her. It was the first time I was really embarrassed, Sensori says. I felt embarrassed because of my dad. But, she says, as I've grown as a human being, no, I don't care. I wouldn't be doing something I didn't want to do, Sensori says. Every time she has appeared nude, she says, it has been her choice. When she does put together a look, she asks Ye for feedback because she thinks he's a genius. Me and my husband would work on my outfits together, Sensori says, so it was like a collaboration. It was never I was being told to do something. If you were married to Gianni Versace, wouldn't he give you a dress or something? Lawson says that when they were working on Biopop, Ye always has a thought about something, and it's not like a loud thought, it's often quiet. I would say he's right almost all the time, because he's very sensitive and perceptive. Even though he steps back and it's Bianca's work, she's going to do what she wants to do. This is effing art. In 2024, multiple former employees and people who worked with Ye separately sued him, with accusations that included abuse, assault, and a hostile work environment. One filing claimed that the musician wore a shirt with a swastika on it and said that Kardashian was controlled by Jewish people. In another case, an assistant who worked on Donda asserted that Ye offered her a $1 million annual salary to be available to him 24/7, gave her an additional $1 million to delete her OnlyFans account, and that he masturbated in front of her and forced her to have oral sex with him before firing her without severance. In an additional filing, that woman accused Ye of swatting her house by hiring a third party to file false reports, including one that she'd killed her own mother, in order to incite armed law enforcement raids. Ye has denied the allegations. A model who participated in a 2010 music video involving Ye alleged that during the shoot he had strangled her and shoved his fingers down her throat while yelling, "This is art! This is effing art! I am like Picasso!" Ye is seeking to dismiss the case, contending in a court filing that, among other arguments, the shoot was an on-camera performance that included staged conduct to emulate sexual assault and other violence, and the model did not object or attempt to leave the set. Sensori seems to both agree with Ye's alleged sentiment that making great art can be obscene and scarring, and that people may feel wronged by that process. That's some people's path, she says. You have to respect that some people, that's what they need to do. The things that go on in Ye and Sensori's work would obviously be inappropriate if they occurred in, for example, an architecture firm. Sensori implies that the discomfort with the environment is related to employment status, as in, when these former employees were part of the team, they were fine with how things were done. These emotions, there's always emotional charge, Sensori says. There's obviously times where somebody's hurt by not working anymore. Now, Sensori says, when she hires a producer, she makes sure they're okay with things like nudity. Before Sensori shares anything that might be considered pornographic, she asks, "Do I have your consent to show you this image?" She jokes that she sounds shanti, a Sanskrit term for possessing inner peace, about any employee's decision to pursue litigation, but ask, can you censor the artist from showing something that they need to show to get their work done? Like the show's director, Becerra, and the cheery young people around the performance space who tell me they're thrilled to be here working with Censori and Ye, Lawson is, for now, a collaborator who understands the mission. To see people as artists, you look beyond good and bad, he says. Ye's glow is there even when things are controversial. The virtuous artist is like a bizarre idea to me. The artist is traveling up and down the realms of good and evil to find some truth. As to the question of whether you can separate the art from the artist, Lawson, of course, says, I don't need to know whether Caravaggio was a good or bad person. He concedes, I mean, murder is always obviously a problematic thing. While they live, they have to pay the consequences for their choices. Until February 2025, it didn't bother Censori that people were absorbing her nakedness as something cheap and attention-seeking rather than artistic work making a statement about control and sexuality, or if they did see it as the latter, that they were misinterpreting Censori's autonomy. I did not like that part, she says. I've never gone home and cried myself to sleep over anything anyone has said. Because it interests me when the reaction is not the intention, because that's just what lives within everybody. I was explaining this to somebody once, and he said, well, your intention was lost. It's okay that the intention was lost. It doesn't matter. I was able to express myself. That's all that mattered. Some people got it. Censori says Saint Laurent's creative director Anthony Vaccarello came up to her at Chateau Marmont and said Censori's hosiery had influenced a YSL show. A major pop star, whom Censori declines to name on the record, told Censori that she'd inspired the tour's looks. I attended one of that star's concerts. Several looks conjured Censori. But Censori also went to the home of a prominent gallerist. She says when she entered, he exclaimed, oh my gosh, it's the biggest performance artist in the world. When Censori tried to collaborate, the gallerist didn't see the vision. What are you going to do, he asked her, walk in and out of restaurants for the rest of your life? Gone too far. After Ye's pro-Nazi post and the one asserting his dominion over his wife and partner, a song called Bianca was leaked. The lyrics sound literal. My baby, she ran away, but first she tried to get me committed. Not going to the hospital, because I'm not sick. She's having a panic attack, and she is not liking the way that I tweeted. Until Bianca's back, I stay up all night. I'm not going to sleep. I really don't know where she's at. I'm tracking my bitch through an app. I'm tracking my bitch through the city. I guess we the new Cassie and Diddy. With the anti-Semitism and the implications of violence, Ye had gone too far. I ask Censori if she is anti-Semitic. No, she says. In a later conversation, she tells me, the fact that anti-Semitism is mainstream is terrifying. I say that her silence and continued presence in the marriage has allowed people to think that she supports her husband's statements, which she insists that even he doesn't believe. My father is Jewish, and so is half of my family. Censori's complicity is something I had personally questioned, too. I ask Censori if she ever asked Ye about why he was focusing his energy on Jewish people and Nazism. She says she did, but that she didn't get an answer that made enough sense to remember. You have to think of other obsessions he's had, she says, because this would have been one that was perceived as damaging. Censori interrupts, then corrects herself. Obviously it was damaging, but hasn't he also had extreme obsessions before? A list. Christianity, architecture, his ex-wife during their divorce. The public wasn't at the forefront of my concerns at that time, says Censori. I wasn't thinking about the PR cleanup. I was really focused on him and myself. And in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, eventually we're going to have this conversation. I would have the opportunity to tell you that I'm not anti-Semitic. He met with a rabbi recently, Censori says. You know, he has to go through his process and how he amends that, and I'm here to support and love and be with him. I love him so much. We're like the same person. By the time I met Sensori in Korea, Ye was working on his apology to address the manic episode. Evinoam Pat, the director of the Center for the Study of Anti-Semitism at NYU, tells Vanity Fair that the impact of Ye's words matters, regardless of intent. Ye's recent outburst coincide with a rise in anti-Semitism across the U.S. The Anti-Defamation League has reported a 344% rise in attacks against Jewish people between 2019 and 2024. Pat, who says he still listens to Ye's music from before he went off the rails, cites the danger of mainstreaming when a hugely influential figure espouses fringe conspiracies. All I can do is always just be there and help, Sensori says, tearing up. This year was a lot like doing CPR for months. I have the love and empathy for him to be able to do that, and I understand that the world doesn't. There were times when Sensori says she felt like she could no longer continue the relationship, though she says she understands now that those feelings were surface level, and at her core, she knew they would stay together. Despite Ye's protestations that he would not be entering treatment, last year he checked into rehab in Switzerland. During a 2019 interview with David Letterman, Ye had discussed the trauma of the first time he was hospitalized for bipolar disorder. They handcuff you, they drug you, they put you on the bed, and they separate you from everyone you know, Ye told Letterman. This time was different, not least because Sensori had recently gone through inpatient treatment at the program's facility in Spain. I needed to work on myself, Sensori says, because I had patterns of things that I would do that would not just hurt me, but would hurt the people around me. She says she would explode on those closest to her. I put a lot of pressure on other people being the reason for my happiness or the reason for my unhappiness, Sensori says. I would blame someone else if I wasn't feeling good. She was also self-medicating with benzodiazepines. Rehab, she says, changed my life. How was I a completely different person? I was very emotionally dysregulated, and I can function now. Sensori recognizes the privilege she has to afford the kind of treatment she and Ye got. Anything that you have ever bought me does not equate to how important this was to me, she told him when she thanked him for paying for the facility, which Sensori acknowledges was ridiculous in price. There were very chaotic times over the last year, Lawson says, so them seeking treatment in different ways has been really useful and really helpful. And obviously, for the artist, you want to regulate. But you don't want to regulate so much that you're not digging. You're not in your creative flow. So there's like a sweet spot there, and they found it. A form of control. Though Sensori likes being in creative mayhem, she and her husband now have a quotidian routine. Sensori cooked Thanksgiving for their friends. 2 turkeys, 2 mac and cheeses, 2 collard greens. Sensori gives me her poultry technique. Herbs and a brine overnight. Remove the turkey from the fridge and let rest until it's nearly room temp. 8 sticks of butter per bird. Yes, I ask if I'd heard her right. Aluminum foil tent to steam. Cheesecloth for a couple hours. Raw dog at the end for crispy skin. Sensori and Ye spend a lot of time alone together indoors and not exercising. They simply don't enjoy it. She says the only difference between them is that he's not really that into astrology, whereas Sensori very much is, giving me the contact for her reader and noting that me and my husband's charts are crazy together in Vedic astrology, with the same moon and rising signs. She only talks about those signs off record, because I'm convinced that people do weird things with astrology. I like all sort of woo-woo occulty stuff. Sensori has the punctiliousness of a Capricorn. Her birthday is January 5th, but her moon speaks to her artistic, sensitive side. Sensori says that since rehab, she has been channeling messages from the dead. I'll do the same thing over and over and over again, Sensori says, of her globe circumnavigating constancy, noting that she's only eaten fries and ketchup for the last 3 days. Sensori is currently into a cryptography puzzle app she uses on her phone. And Ye plays Mafia and other plot-heavy games, like The Last of Us on the PlayStation. They also watch films, from Docs on the band D'Antwoord and Kurt Cobain to Robert Eggers' Irv, to what they call Denny's movies, so named for the diner chain, to denote things that are so bad they're good, such as the Megan franchise. Sensori wants to see Baby Girl, especially when I tell her that the filmmaker Helena Rhine grew up in a cult. I love cults, Sensori says. I like that in human nature. We can push ourselves and devote ourselves to a point of literally dying for something. When I ask if Sensori would die for her art, she stops short of committing to death, but she says, I would go to extreme lengths. Sensori wants to have a baby, though she isn't sure when. When is it ever the right time for kids, she muses. The next installment in her art series will be about children, specifically how society consumes them. Sensori collects vintage pieces from the Royal Doulton Ceramic Company, which produce kitschy figurines of royals like Kate Middleton and Prince William posing outside the hospital with Prince George days after she gave birth. Sensori's next piece also reckons with the way children are presented by their parents on social media. I don't feel right watching kids perform like that, she tells me when we speak a few weeks later. You obviously have child labor, which is an extreme point of using children for other people's gain. But also, if you have a social media account or something where you profit off your child, where does the line get drawn for that? I feel uncomfortable with the idea that a child becomes part of a machine. Overexposure at a young age does what I would say probably does damage. As she and Ye think about reproducing, Sensori considers the fact that the child will have no control over the fact of their nepotism and moving to a country with stricter laws about publishing photos of minors. If their future progeny are raised in America, they will almost certainly be forcibly documented, as Ye's children were when he and Sensori took them to Disneyland over the holidays. My husband and I speak about it, she says. He has a real issue with L.A. because of that idea that they can photograph kids. Though there have been rumors that Ye hadn't seen his children in 6 months, Sensori says they are not accurate. He left her Vanity Fair photo shoot to be with them at home, where they were waiting for Sensori when the day wrapped. He's a really awesome dad, according to Sensori. He's fun and will do things like almost build worlds for them. I remember one time they came over and he made the whole room foam so they could jump on everything. It's really cute, especially if you're a little kid, a tiny, short little bub. Sensori reminds me that during the COVID pandemic, he created an entire school. The unaccredited academy shuttered after a series of incidents, including Ye posting, "When I wake up, I'm going DEFCON 3 on Jewish people." I ask if the school was a failure, given that it closed. I think I don't believe in failures, Sensori says. I always see everything as cyclical, or like a wheel. It's always in motion, and it either happens for a reason, for a lesson. She does note, it can also be bad reasons. In Seoul, Sensori is summoned to a final dress rehearsal for the show. The freckles I saw when we first met yesterday are buried under foundation and her hair obscured by a bang piece. Sensori is in a Basic Instinct style white dress she had someone fabricate for her at Yeezy, and for much of the conversation she sits in the Sharon Stone manner. Sensori is wearing underwear. Do you feel like you get me? Sensori asks before she leaves. I tell her she's the person I've interviewed who is least like the public version of herself. I'd been worried that Sensori was right, that she was interesting because she was a black box mystery, and that once she was solved, she would cease to fascinate, a human version of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. But squaring what we have projected onto her is actually more intriguing than not knowing. I ask her the most obvious question. Why is she talking now? Because I have something to talk about, Sensori says. I didn't necessarily have anything to say at that time, because the pressure to speak at those exact moments, what would I have spoken about? It was like the question that would have been asked to me at that time would have been regarding my marriage. Demanding me to speak, she says, is a form of control in itself. My husband wants to meet you. Before Sensori's first of two performances, her family comes out to watch on four folding chairs near the stage. Ye in monochromatic black with wraparound sunglasses and a croquis-style cord, and is followed by Sensori's aunt, the one who was on the boat in Venice, sister and mother, who is resplendent in the type of floor-length sequined dress Susan Lucci lost 18 daytime Emmys in. As soon as Ye sits, people begin ramming their phones in his face, editing, captioning, posting. The invitation to the show was a pharmacy-style bottle with a prescription label for Biopop and filled with one heart-shaped candy. Having swallowed the pill, so to speak, we are here, listening to a score by Ye, his first newly released music in months. Sensori comes out in a latex catsuit that required 50 swatches to capture the correct shade of blood red. She walks to a Flintstones by way of Jetson's kitchen set and slowly moves around the range, painstakingly making some mixture that requires infinite adjustments. Then puts the bowl in the oven. The pleasant orchestration becomes a scream as Sensori pulls out a cake in the same scarlet as her latex. She slowly wheels it to the other side of the stage, where a curtain is drawn, what sounds like a bass-laden version of the credits to a TV Western play, and the turn is revealed. Five body doubles of Sensori, each with a Bianca wig and mask and a flesh-colored bodysuit. For the entire 15-minute show, they've been contorted into pieces of furniture Lawson fabricated, pieces befitting something between an asylum and BDSM dungeon, and reminiscent of Alan Jones's 1960s pop sculpture series, which depicts fiberglass women in fetish wear as home objects. One Bianca, a 19-year-old whom Sensori found on Instagram, is folded backward into the table so she sits on her own head. A different Bianca is splayed open as a chandelier. Yet another dupe is ankles and ass up, with the real Sensori perched on top of her, staring at the flesh cake. Sensori has taken from her mind the experience of becoming famous by proxy, of making your private life into something people consume. The demonstration of the cost of the labor is genuinely subversive, even remarkable. It also makes her and Ye's marriage make more sense. Someone said this to me once, and it stuck in my mind. You and your husband make images that are so impactful in a time where we're flooded with images, she says. It wasn't the spoken intention. It just naturally occurred. My life is my art, Sensori has told me earlier. Isn't that so annoying? So you can't separate the art from the artist? I don't think so. Not for me, anyway. I know for some people you'd be able to. Yay, I don't think with him either, she says. Sensori texted me after her show. My husband wants to meet you. I was ready for some version of the person Ye has always shown himself to be, asserting dominance over Taylor Swift, Kris Jenner, and for there to be at least a tinge of the semi-transactional relationships he'd always appeared to have with women. This evening, Ye offers the merest glimpse of the credit-hungry benefactor. When I say how could she not want to collaborate with one of the biggest musical geniuses on the sound, Ye corrects me almost exactly the same way his wife had earlier, the best musical genius. But there is no other evidence of Kanye West. Ye is retiring and shy, eating a heart-shaped cake with his gloves as we chat. He compliments Sensori's art and says she's the one with the aura. I ask him about the videos people were taking of him, proving the point of Sensori's show, that your image is replicated without your consent all the time. He murmurs an assent while explaining that it's part of the bargain. If Sensori had been the most different person in private than in public to date, Ye has now taken the cake and gotten it all over his black suede handwear. As Ye stands covered in crumbs in deference to the artist whose night it is, Sensori is soaring around the room in her Sharon Stone dress, laughing as her family and friends laud her work. He watches her silently. Whether it's good or bad, there doesn't seem to be any question about who was in control, at least tonight. About a month after Sensori and I met in Korea, just weeks before this story was scheduled to be published, I got a call from a friend of Ye's. He wanted to know if I was interested in an interview with the best musical genius, which would follow the publication of an apology he had been working on. The letter would be published as an advertisement in the Wall Street Journal and include expressions of regret to the Jewish and black communities. It would explain the high that Ye felt during his manic episode and his subsequent anguish at his impact. It would discuss Ye's long-delayed diagnosis of bipolar 1 disorder after a traumatic brain injury. Ye wanted to say he was sorry, to be understood, to clear the air that he had poisoned. He had long announced album called Bully coming out, which was meant to be the first piece of what Ye promised would be positive, meaningful art. And he would need to meaningfully address the harm he'd done. Like many other people, I had questions about what Ye hadn't said last year. Why Jewish people specifically had become his obsession. What he thought about white supremacist and anti-Semite Nick Fuentes dancing to Ye's song Heil Hitler, and how he felt about claiming he had dominion over Sensori. To this intermediary, I was honest. If Ye talked about all of this in advance of the introduction of Sensori, putting her voice into the world, it would be impossible to control what would happen next. It would, once again, become all about Ye. He was apparently okay with that, and as always, Sensori supported her husband's artistic vision. Now here's the Proust questionnaire with a portrait by Gil Button. Jeff Goldblum. The actor, musician, and virtuosic raconteur is thrilled to teach the world what uxorious means and counts a certain cartoon sailor among his favorite philosophers. What is your idea of perfect happiness? Every single person and living creature on the planet is safe and well-nourished. What is your greatest fear? Any misfortune involving our kids. Also, I have recurring nightmares that involve being chased by people or being attacked by scary animals. With which historical figure do you most identify? Houdini. Which living person do you most admire? My wife. All those who contribute something of beauty and scientist. What is your greatest extravagance? Home improvements and uxorious gifts. What do you consider the most overrated virtue? Stoicism. If it hurts, say so. On what occasion do you lie? Whenever I'm acting, which I try to do truthfully, a delicious paradox. What or who is the greatest love of your life? Emily, Charlie, and River. When and where were you happiest? The first time Emily and I kissed. Which talent would you most like to have? I wouldn't mind being able to locate the pickles in the refrigerator. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be? I am what I am, and that's all that I am. Popeye. What do you consider your greatest achievement? I've never had a cavity. What is your most treasured possession? Our shared life force. I also like my new piano. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery? Solitary confinement. What is your most marked characteristic? Some people say he's so Jeff Goldblum. What do you most value in your friends? Kindness, intelligence, humor. Who are your favorite writers? F. Scott Fitzgerald, Arthur Miller, Yuval Noah Harari, Thelonious Monk, Robert Towne, Rogers and Hart. Who is your favorite hero of fiction? Detective Meyer Lansman, the main character in Michael Chabon's The Yiddish Policeman's Union. When I was a kid, I liked Zorro. Who are your heroes in real life? The playmakers for the Pittsburgh Steelers. What are your favorite names? Charlie Ocean and River Joe. What is it that you most dislike? Deliberate cruelty and itchy tags inside shirts. How would you like to die? With a clear conscience. Or like the Elephant Man in the David Lynch movie. And that was the Proust questionnaire with Jeff Goldblum. This program is intended for the blind and print impaired community. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org, or you can ask your smart speaker to play North Carolina Reading Service. Opening and closing music by Calexico, interval selections by Mark Hoffman.